Program do not necessarily reflect those of WTRK, its management, or employees of Rollins College.
Hey, welcome back to Punkonomics here at WPRK, Winter Park, Florida. And back on topic here with education.
Yeah, and particularly, you know, bad education, right? I mean, we're not talking about all the wonderful things we could do, but the mess that's being done, sadly, right? So high stakes exams, Common Core, which we've just learned is really the kind of the federal guidelines of what to evaluate. And this whole culture of addressing an education system that needs to kind of advance, it's still very much mired in the 19th century, and we're already in the 21st, and that a lot of the decision makers in this field are driven by ignorance, profit, what else?
And also control.
Control of the kids.
You know, we were introduced to the phrase testing everything that moves, and you know, I think it's sort of parallels the this culture's need to bring everything under its control, including you know, children as well, you know, preventing them from thinking for themselves or thinking in very creative or even subversive ways.
Yeah, after all, we know very well that critical thinking is the one thing that they don't want us to know well, seemingly. After all the tests that they give us, what they don't want us to know is creativity and how to actually, like, express ourselves and stuff like that. We just need to memorize and regurgitate.
Yeah, well, it's they don't want you to learn how to think. They want to teach you what to think.
Exactly.
And that, you know, that's not really going to get anybody anywhere. And you know, we were talking about resistance and civil disobedience, and just to share with you that we have had entire schools choose to opt out of standardized testing. Garfield High School in Washington, at the urging of the teachers, the entire school opted out of the state test in Washington. In the last couple of months, 5,000 students walked out in Colorado in resistance to the test that they forced seniors to take.
That's really
yeah,
impressive.
But it's so inspiring that people are becoming aware of the risk and the cost, because we've talked about cost. We have to know that students, particularly high school age students, are becoming aware.
But I mean, as far as I know, a lot of people in my school aren't aware. I mean, maybe the absence was like some students who knew, but I mean, it wasn't that significant. I mean, it was just a few people out, so it might have been a few people sick or something, but nobody was talking about something like this. It's really something that isn't part of the public consciousness.
Well, when you say it's not part of the public conscience, people who know there's a problem are the people who've been hurt. So I don't know what your zip code is, but I'm going to say that, you know, unless you've been hurt by the test, unless you've been remediated or retained or denied a diploma, you're not really going to start asking questions about what's wrong with the test in the first place.
Yeah.
So, but I also want to say that kids fail the test for reasons other than, you know, they just might be lousy test takers.
Yeah.
It might have nothing to, you know, it might not have anything to do with their demographics.
My sister's sort of like that. When I try to like tutor her and teach her and stuff at home, she gets it really easily, but then she gets bad grades on the test because it's not the same kind of atmosphere of like teaching, learning.
But if you look at the answers to a test question, the object isn't to find the right answer, it's to find the most right answer.
Yeah.
So
choose the best answer.
Correct. But often there are multiple correct answers within the four
yeah,
choices.
But like the best one.
Correct.
Which they define.
Which is very subjective.
The choices, the animals, of choice. My God,
it is, Daddy. Everything is Scantron right. today.
But right. that, I'm trying to say that this stuff, it's a bad test. It's a bad mm-hmm. test. Not only academically a bad test, mm-hmm. it's not really relevant to, it's not what you do in the real world.
No, it's written.
It's a specific skill.
Correct. And it's also written with a level of difficulty. So, you know, say you're starting to test in third grade, mm-hmm. the level of difficulty increases as you work your way up through your high school career. So you'll have only maybe 60% difficulty level starting out, but that goes all the way up to 85%. And so it's so much more complicated than we can, you know, really nail down. But people don't become aware, to get back to what you said, is they don't become aware until they've been hurt. You know, we have people coming to us now in droves because suddenly their mm-hmm. kids have been doing nothing but testing. And it's because of all the progress monitoring going on in public school. Because you have the big test at the end of the year, and the school district wants to make sure you're going to do well on that because their funding is related to how well you do. Mm-hmm. So they're going to monitor you to death until the day you take that test in the spring.
And this not only doesn't measure the kind of flexible thinking required in the workplace and to solve the problems we face, it's not measuring anything worthwhile, really. It's a waste of time. Because I think a lot of people might think this is rigor. Well, you know, you have to test them, you have to push them, you have to be hard, tough love. But I want to mm-hmm. underline the fact that this isn't testing anything that you would be even academic, in a large sense. These exams that you're describing in the K-12 are even in a traditional academic sense that who knows how relevant that is for a workplace environment.
Sure.
It's not even that. It's not even that.
You don't, in a practical setting, you're not going to get a multiple choice opportunity to make every decision while you're at your job.
That's a particular game.
Right.
I have to agree with the problem with the testing. I just finished taking a couple practice tests for the LSAT, and it's just like that. You have five answers, and you're supposed to choose the best answer, and four of the answers are close to the right answer. Mm. Mm-hmm. So
we have massive arguments about that in English class, about like, especially, I mean, how are you supposed to pick the best answer on like a piece of poetry?
But just the, using the word best is subjective. I mean,
yeah,
that's
correct is what they say.
Right, right.
Well, you can, I mean, I've learned how to do it. Back in the graduate school, they actually taught me how to write multiple choice exams. I did some. I've seen good ones. The idea is that within a well-defined system of thought, right, with well-defined elements, within maybe a model of some kind of knowledge, you have the detractor. That question, that answer that is close to being true but not the right one is supposed to precisely, if you will, separate the A's from the B's, right? Nail that slight misunderstanding. It's not you don't know what the hell you're talking about it, but you've missed an important element if you write it right. So again, I don't think multiple choice is particularly relevant to the real world. I don't think it captures a variety of skills, intellectual skills, for an academic sense. And the exams that our kids are subjected to in Florida, that's all I know, you know, are awful. You know, if I handed those kind of questions to good old Art Benavy in Carolina back in the day, he would have yelled at me and humiliated me and thrown me out of his office to write some new ones.
Sure. And not only are the questions really crappy, but it's the only thing that your future is being determined by. So it's not, mm-hmm. It's not just a bad test. It's that, you know, if you describe this to somebody without talking about education, it sounds like the Hunger Games, first of all.
I was going to say that. Yeah. Perfect. So, I was just going to say.
It sounds like something that was created in a wonderful fiction world that we can put down the book and get on with a normal life. But for many, many kids, they don't ever get to put the book down.
Right.
And
then we get here at Rollins, for example, we get a kind of generally good students overall. Yeah. You know, they're good students, most of them. That we get a variety, and it's almost a struggle because they're so broken down. In order to be so good, to have those high SATs, right, to have had those high grades that allow them then to get accepted here, mm-hmm. they're broken down. You have to kind of go find that spark of intelligence in there.
They've conformed. They've completely conformed.
Yeah. So they don't believe me when I tell them, no, be creative. No, pick your, they're panicky because I tell them, no, pick your topic of choice and develop anything you want out of it. They're like, oh my God, he's gunning for me. And they go, no, no, I hold their hands. I give them a hug. I tell them, no, no, it's okay.
I see where that comes from in my AP history class. It's like, there's always a trick on the test. Mm. He loves tricking us. Like, we have to write in some names and stuff, and like we had to pay who was the inventor of like the modern cigarette, which is completely useless for today, like to know ever.
Yeah,
and
I don't know.
One of the options was Charles Marlborough, and like it was in the book in like a little box that we were supposed to read. Mm. And I was like, okay, that's the only name I recognize. I'm going to put that because, I mean, where did the name come from if it wasn't a person? And of course it
was R.J. Reynolds.
I don't know. I don't remember. It's a useless piece of information.
There's neurologic. I've been reading some of the neurological stuff for my gamification things, you know, and it's really, I mean, it's scientific, people. I mean, this is like how not to remember. This is how not to teach. We're teaching in the, like, you know, how scientifically you're supposed not to teach. It's not, so it's really important because I know a lot of people might be skeptical of what you're saying, Cindy, because they're saying, like you were saying, oh, this is conspiracy. Ah, oh, this is like, well, they're too soft on the kids. You want them to all be like flourishing, reading poetry and doing arts. No, they have to learn the hard-nosed, tough love and stuff. And I want to make clear to people that no. This is not the point here. There's even neurological evidence why you do need to do arts and stuff. That's another matter altogether.
Absolutely. And you know, we go through cycles of awareness to this problem. And we're about to have a big one because in the spring, once everyone tests, we anticipate a 70% failure rate. So even the kids who normally do well on standardized testing are going to be met with a reality check once the scores start coming back. And of course our Department of Education will change the cut score, move it up or down however they need to manipulate the numbers. If the kids are doing too bad, they'll make it not quite so painful. And so we'll have a big surge again whenever the scores are released. But that addresses the next issue, is that as an instructor, I'm sure that most teachers they want to see the feedback. They want informed instruction. Mm. They want the test to do something. Use it as a tool. In fact, Pearson and McGraw-Hill all say right on the test it shouldn't be, it should not be the one and only determiner. Mm-hmm. It should be just a tool in the toolbox. The problem is that the test scores don't come back until the kids have moved on. And we're going to have a 70% failure rate this year based on the scores from Utah, New York, and Kentucky. And we're not going to get the test results back. Could be winter. So the kids are going to take the tests in March and April, and it could be winter of the next school year before we get the results. So what's the plan? Are they going to pull fourth graders out of fourth grade and say you got to go back to third grade once they're halfway through their fourth grade year? Pam Stewart, the commissioner, told the Senate subcommittee she didn't have a plan. So, you know, it's
good to know that we can count on our government.
Yeah. At all levels.
Yeah, it's like... it's like we're just gonna pull everything out of our behinds and like go from there. Any students who like this is a very important defining moment of their educational career, too bad.
Well, and our legislators, they created the mess last year. They implement. We have a new state test, the FSA. We have end of course exams, and we have a new set of standards fully implemented this year. It's like the ticking time bomb was carefully made by our legislators. And it's the job of the Department of Education in the state to figure out how to make all that work. So they are asking questions. They're starting to ask questions, reasonable questions, things they maybe should have asked before they made these decisions, but they're not educators. Last year in the session in the state of Florida, out of all of our representatives, only 8 of them had anything to do with education at all. And yet it's almost 52% of the budget for the state.
Well, that's another typical thing that's going on in America today where the people who make decisions are not coming from the trenches.
Right.
Even within schools, typically, the real people wielding power are not, I mean, they like to say so, but they haven't spent a lot of time teaching.
Well, and we have to remember as citizens,
everywhere,
if we're not talking to them and we're not telling them what we want, somebody else is. So yeah. Don't underestimate your power, you know, as a student, as mm-hmm. a professor, as a mom and an activist. You cannot mm-hmm. underestimate your power to influence change in Tallahassee, because if we're talking, they are listening. Mm-hmm. If someone else, if Jeb Bush and his foundation and everyone that believes that public dollars should be spread around to corporations, if they're talking, that's who they're listening to. So if we want change, we have to make it happen, and that's kind of where we've accepted our responsibility mm-hmm. in regards to civil disobedience, and there's lots of levels to that. So.
And then the economic ideology position, I mean, right, it's kind of mixed, right? I mean, you actually told me how you're perceived often as some kind of, you know, anti-government right-winger.
Right, and I'm a liberal Democrat. So.
Well, that kind of maybe hints you to that this is a rational kind of pragmatic question here. It's not ideological, but so many of our rational pragmatic problems, including education, it's a big one, are kind of obscured by these ideological divides. So we have to be mm-hmm. careful about that.
Well, and I think that if you look at the resistance to this, it is bipartisan, and so is the... So is the support. I mm-hmm. mean, this is not coming just from Jeb Bush's foundation. This is coming from our Democratic president and, and his cabinet, including the Secretary of Education. So we have
Rahm Emanuel, the butcher of Chicago, was
the weirdest.
I just invented it for her, good old Rahm right here, the butcher of Chicago. We should play Rebel Diaz as the Chicago teacher. That's a great hip hop tune.
It's definitely a mirrored comparison. The people that are fighting and the people that have developed mm-hmm. it, and the media would like to say that it's not a bipartisan support and of the situation, and they're wrong. And they want to separate us and keep us from working together. And
because then it becomes these kind of tags, right? So you're saying I find that there's a major centralized bureaucracy that's not doing well
with
our students. So you're anti-government.
That's
you
right.
Must
even,
be a teabagger.
Even I will work with the libertarians on this. Jeff.
Exactly. Yeah, totally.
But also,
but not Randians. Let's draw a line somewhere,
Jay.
You bring up an interesting point, and I wanted to, you know, touch on this a little bit, but what's also bipartisan is the destruction of the educational system. It is incredibly a bipartisan affair, and the media would like us mm-hmm. to, or like to pretend that it isn't.
Exactly. That's what I was saying. Right. We have our Democratic president working with our...
Right.
Whatever, I can't say anything nice about Jeb Bush, so I'm just not going to say anything at all. But yeah, it is, there is nothing partisan about either side of this issue.
Oh, please, by all means, hate. Our show is committed to equal opportunity hate.
We
encourage
Al Sharpton working with Newt Gingrich to
destroy. Well, and Jeb Bush had his education summit, which we call No Corporation Left Behind.
Right.
No corporation.
I mean, it is, you know, it was like a public, it was a public fundraiser, which is unusual, actually, because it was televised by the Florida Channel, which is supposed to only be televising government affairs. And it was a $1,000 a head fundraiser called an Education Summit, raising money for a campaign? Public awareness about education policy?
Yeah, I don't like these supposedly
grassroots
or...
Yeah, well, and they opened it up to the public. They did allow us to try to get a ticket. I didn't get in.
But
how kind of them to let the peasants in.
So actually, you know, those events open to the public. I'll tell you a little secret about that. So when President Obama came here to Rawlins, they were doing... a quote-unquote grassroots organization in Sanford, and I went down there to get the tickets, and I said, well, yeah, I want to get a ticket so that I can ask him a question. And they were like, ask him a question. What do you want to do? Get arrested? And I was like, wait a second. You call this a grassroots affair, but you cannot. So somebody's going to come and speak at us, and you can't ask them a question. And you're calling this a grassroots affair. Yeah, it is grassroots. And that's exactly what's going
to
happen.
Yeah, Jeb Bush's education summit was never really – I don't think that they even tried to get us to believe it was a grassroots thing. I mean, they were pretty upfront about what it was.
I think grassroots is defined today as it's not a fundraising $10,000 a plate plus.
It means produced by Monsanto and legislated by the Koch brothers.
Right, but
the peasants are allowed to watch.
You know, but it's very interesting. You know, like I had that conversation with them that you know if you're having a politician come here for re-election, you know, we should at least, in the very least, be able to ask questions. Mm-hmm. If anything, how it should go is that, well, we will tell you what we like and what we want, and maybe if we'll hear what you have to say, and maybe if we like you, we'll vote for you. If not, then we mm-hmm. just won't. But and it was completely, it was interesting because it was that idea was completely lost on them. I couldn't have that conversation, so I didn't bother with the
participating in the spectacle with the
ticket because mm-hmm. you know I didn't think that they were I was like I'll get arrested for asking a question.
Yeah, these things are scripted. I mean, that's definitely part of the case. You're not allowed. There is still a hope, right? I mean, because there are people, like you're saying, there are parents that are wondering what's wrong with this picture, and there's the pain. It's interesting you're saying it in this context because that's, I mean, the nature of when crisis comes in broad political economy, it usually comes from those who are experiencing the pain.
Right.
We are actually, in our education system, we are often focusing always on the leadership, right, on the top people, and think somehow we reinterpret history as a wonderful, charitable, and kind idea of the masters. But that's not the way. That's how it's taught, isn't it? Most of the time, I spend every day of my working day trying to like poke holes into that view of the world. That's what we're told. But no, it's real grassroots. It's people who are experiencing the pain.
Right.
Who are typically pushing, and then the bourgeoisie and some noble upper classmen, you know.
Right. Well, it's when the people in pain refuse to allow anyone else to inflict it anymore. Mm. Yeah. And so we've seen when people come to us, like I said before, their kids are in some kind of pain. But moms are pretty motivated to make that pain stop.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very encouraging. Even if they're afraid of what's going on, even if they are unsure of the process to try to take a little bit of public education back, they know what's motivating them, mm-hmm. and that can carry them for a long way.
Americans have consistently correctly yelled for good education, good health,
mm-hmm.
and we're still waiting. Oh, we have a caller.
So it's breaking news. Like it just happened just now.
Uh-oh. Oh, God. Breaking news, that's usually not a good thing. But we have a caller. We'll find out in a minute. I'm like worried already. Enough that my alma mater in Chapel Hill had some kind of racist nutter mm-hmm. killing Muslims in the name of freedom and tolerance.
I'm just basically talking to you over the phone.
Excellent. Yeah, put them on. Wait. Hold on,
Yeah, hold on for a second. Okay, caller, we have you. Go ahead and ask your question.
Hello?
Yes.
Yes. Go ahead and ask a question.
Oh, hi. This is Jen. I thought you said Carla. Ha ha. This is Jen Ashby. Hi, guys. How are you?
Hey, Jen.
Hi. I'm actually calling to ask a question that just came to my attention regarding kindergartners through second grade. I just got an email from our elementary school noting the testing date. And what it looks like to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that kindergartners through second grade will now be taking not the ITBS,
but the
which
Iowa.
Is the Iowa State
mm-hmm.
of Basic Skills, which is a very simple test for them to take, but a new test called the Iowa, not to be confused with the ITBS, a new test called the Iowa, which is more rigorous, does not align with our current standards. Teachers don't know the questions of which are on it to teach the children because it's not aligned with our standards. And K through 12 will have to take this in every single subject as an EOC is if they're in high schooler. And then in addition to that, they're going to be taking an art, music, and PE end of course exam. Is this not crazy? Is this true? And is it true that the teacher evaluations and the teacher pay will be tied to this?
Yep. That's the easy answer. Yep. It's the Orange County Public Schools used to use the ITBS as the alternative assessment for third grade, so that means they've purchased that test. And they need to have an end of course exam for K through second grade. And from my understanding and talking to Bob Schaefer at Fairtest, that the ITBS actually is being phased out completely. It's not going to exist anymore, so it won't be an option for anyone to use. And that the Iowa, IOWA, is going to be replacing it. And it is, and good, the skin on the back of my neck started crawling when you use that R word. But yeah, that's what we're hearing too. We've heard it from teachers for the last 2 weeks. It does not align with what's being taught in the classroom. And I think that it is going to be used as the K through 2 end of course exam.
That is what it says. And I think parents and teachers principals might confuse and assume it's the ITBS because it has the word Iowa in it. And the Iowa test is basically built for them to fail.
Yep. That is right. You're absolutely right.
So we already have this. Okay.
Something I just want to add real quick is that I had an opportunity to speak with a teacher today from a Title I school. And it's actually the only Title I school that is just K through 2. And so last year, they actually piloted the Iowa, not the ITBS, the more, I know you hate this word, rigorous Iowa test. For all of the third graders who did not do well on the FCAT. And over 20 kids, and that's just in that district, that was just in that county, not the entire district, over 20 kids were retained based on the score of their Iowa.
Yeah, so they failed the first test, they failed the second test, and they were retained.
Right, and mm-hmm. and one of those students actually was only 1 point away from passing what last year was the FCAT, what this year will be the FSA. She was 1 point away from passing the FCAT and was forced to take the Iowa, and she scored a 1 out of 100.
Wow.
So that is just how difficult this Iowa test is, and I don't understand why OCPS would choose a test like this to be a default for our children.
Yeah, and I think that, the other obvious option is the SAT-10. And the Iowa was always the test of choice where people thought it was a more reasonable measurement, and so that Orange County originally used the ITBS. But, I think you're right. I don't think that everybody understands that it wasn't just like the ITBS .2, it's the ITBS on steroids .10. And unfortunately, again, awareness comes with huge failure numbers. But I don't think that it's, if anybody who is listening is concerned about what their alternative test is going to be, they need to be asking the district, because the district has the choice for what to use as the alternative assessment. Are they going to use a portfolio, and what does that mean? Are they going to use the ITBS or now the replacement Iowa, or are they going to use a SAT-10? All of those are district choices. So if you have questions, don't let the district push you back up and say, oh, it's Tallahassee's fault, because these are district decisions. They have the power for that. But it is scary. Thank you for talking about it. Blah.
No. Thanks a lot. That's scary, really. I mean, I'm a little bit naive about that, of course. I'm a college professor, so our lives are much better. And it's really, I don't know about this stuff.
It's really, it's, You know, part of what we do is we listen to stories all day long. We listen to teachers who are miserable and leaving in droves. And we have, in one high school in Orange County, in the last 30 days, 75 teachers left out of 200. And they're not leaving because they've got a better plan. They're not leaving to move to the Keys. They're leaving because they can't
take
stay
it
in the classroom anymore. We have students who are failing. We have teachers that are miserable, and we have a system that is broken. So we all get to decide what are we going to do about that? We get to choose now. Our school boards work for us. The superintendent works for the elected school board. The legislators who are elected work for us. And if we're not getting what's best for our kids, are we going to continue to participate in the system? And we want to restore public education, so we really don't all want to run screaming out of public schools. We want to take them back. And we believe that one of the ways to do that is to deny data, not continue to feed the testing machine, and we opt out. We refuse to take the tests. So we're happy to help anybody with a move to do that. It's possible. Don't believe you when they say it's not allowed. It's our right as a parent to choose and to guide our students' education, and that's per the Constitution of the United States.
I saw something yesterday on the news about parents and students were going to protest today about something. They weren't going to show up to school.
Oh, like man, all out. Late to the party.
They mentioned it.
Oh, yeah, you were right.
Yeah,
yeah.
No,
late,
we did. It was
something. Something wires or something.
Yeah, we called for a district-wide action today based on the fact that they were going to be load testing the computer system.
Okay.
And we really wanted to bring awareness to families that their kids were going to participate in a test of the system that was going to test their kids in the spring with a test that could fail 70%.
Okay.
So the goal wasn't just, you know, I mean, I don't think these kids should be just child labor. Why aren't they paying them? Do it on a Saturday, you know, if they want to know if the system is working. But they've got they told the kids to come in and they would play around on the system and they would load test it. And by law, our schools have to load test, because in the spring, all districts across the whole state are going to log on to the system at the same time. And they don't know if it's going to hold up. Probably no. The guesstimate is that Miami-Dade will sign on and the whole system will crash.
Well, that might be a good thing.
Wouldn't that be terrible? Yeah. I know.
Yeah.
So how, I mean, do you see a local, yeah, right, let's anybody anonymous can help us out? Right.
Oh, yeah. That can bring visitors.
I wanted to ask, too, I guess on a more positive note, you know, so I do like what you're doing. You guys are bringing more democracy into guiding students' education. Where would you like to see this going, or what's
where's
the
end for me?
Right.
Even on a practical level, like are there local elected officials? I mean, I know, you know, I think that at the national level, the political system is completely non-functional, but at the local level, there might be some. Is there somebody who's not on the take from the testing industrial
complex?
Well,
yeah, I mean, we've appealed to our school board members who are elected to represent us to the institution of Orange County. We find that that many of them believe that they represent the institution of Orange County to us. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, we appeal to them. We ask them to do things within the realm of their job without violating their oath as constitutional officers. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's something called a progression plan for that every district has to file to the Department of Education saying, you know, we're going to do this and that kid's expected to do that. And so there were things that they could have done to make the testing less stressful. They could have had less district testing.
Mm-hmm.
They could have based decisions of class placement on not on test scores. Like a lot of times when fifth graders take the test, their placement in middle school is based on a test score.
Mm-hmm.
That's not required by anyone. That's a district choice. So it should start at the local level. And in many districts, they are having success. Hillsborough County actually just made a policy that if a student is going to refuse the test, they're going to accommodate them in another room. So mm-hmm. there's no ethical issue with how they treat test refusers, which that's a big step. I mean, it sounds ridiculous that a kid is going to be humiliated and coerced into taking this test by the staff of a school, but it happens all the time. So there are things that can be done within the realm and the boundaries that school board members have. But in Orange County, if you ask if we have any great champions in regards to elected officials, I have to say no.
Mm.
We do have one school board member from Orange County who was a school board member for 16 years, and he's now running for 2016 District 13 Senate, so in the state Senate. He took the FCAT test and failed it. The Washington Post wrote about it, he became the most famous school board member because he failed the test. But he has been fighting against high-stakes testing ever since. Mm-hmm. Rick Roach is who that is. If anybody wants more information about what's wrong with the test, ask him. He's got the best information.
Mm-hmm.
So shout-out to my friend Blair, by the way, who's listening from at home. Mm-hmm. And she wanted to know exactly how do we not take the EOCs if they're such, like, crap and all they're doing is helping.
Well, EOC again? People. You know me?
EOC
challenged?
Is the end of course exam.
Okay. Thank you.
EOC's
right. Okay. So, first of all, there's end of course, what we do, end of course exams is like a whole new monster for us this year. It really depends on what kind of risk she's willing to take because state provided end of course exams are going to be worth 30% of her grade. As a high school student in Orange County.
That's a lot.
Yeah, as a high school student in Orange County, all the other district written end of course exams, like music, phys ed, all those, they're only going to be worth 20% of your grade. And for K through 5, 0%. So she kind of needs to take a look at her schedule. Is she a good student? Does she have an A? Does she want to risk the A? And then, it's pretty risky to not take the end of course exams, and they are the most damaging.
Yeah.
They're doing the most damage to teachers, and they have the potential to completely change your GPA.
If I can jump in here real quick, that caller that just called us, could you please call us again? For some reason, I couldn't hear you over the phone, and we're going to try to get your phone on the other booth. Thank you.
So, in regards to high school students asking about how to opt out of end of course exams, I just want you to just be aware that they're awful tests. We need to do away with them. There is actually great hope right now. Some things are happening in Tallahassee that indicate they might go
That's
away.
That's really promising.
Yeah, I know. And let me tell you. If you guys, if high school students are out there listening right now, please write to your House representatives, because right now we have the state Senate all talking about education issues, and we have the House talking about a statewide uniform policy.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
That's a good question. We need our House reps talking about what matters in education, and right now what matters is the high stakes attached to testing. So we don't need to be wasting our time with uniforms. It may be important to somebody there in the House, but it's not what's impacting student lives right now.
So I had another question. So what alternatives can teachers and parents and students take besides, so opting out is one way of doing it and getting around the law. But one of the things that might be problematic with that is that because the law has these gaps or rough edges that people can get around, lawmakers may try to tighten
close
them up.
Close it.
and close those gaps.
The only thing left for them to do is to criminalize it.
Right.
If they criminalize opt-out, they're going to have to send moms to jail. And quite frankly, I could use the 3 days off. It means no phone, no radio shows, no television interviews, no computers for 3 days. Right. But really and truly, it is the only thing left is to criminalize it. They've made the stakes so high for everyone.
What I wanted to know was what alternatives could we start creating,
right,
as parents, former students, teachers in the community.
Alternatives to what?
Alternative.
So you want to fight the test, but you still want to take the test?
No, not necessarily take the test, but I mean, on a more long-term level, what alternatives to the educational system can
I'm not going to solve it.
Yeah.
I can talk to you about what alternatives there are to the current accountability system.
Right.
But
hold on, we have a caller.
Yeah, we have a caller.
Two people have been running amok for the past 5 minutes.
Yeah,
trying to get
the phone call. anyway, we have Kayla Myers. She wants to contribute to the show. She wants to ask about opting out. Kayla.
Hi.
We got you.
Hey, Kayla.
Hey,
hi, Benny. Hi, Cindy. Hi, Felix. Felix, I just want to tell you that you are not the only one that knows about testing at school. I have the same problem you're having. I don't know how to get the word across to my friends. I'm trying to do little things, but I feel like if we as students who score higher on these state mandated tests, if we take our data away, then that will create a big impact as well.
We should try to talk to the people who do the announcements. Maybe they'll try to, help us out.
Oh, I would love it if somebody would announce it over the PA system of a local high school.
Because I feel like if we were able to, get a video together or something and submit it to, morning announcements, because they always do, clips at the end of the announcements, and they're always just stupid little, not even entertaining clips most of the time. If we could get something really meaningful out there, it would create a big impact, and then kids could finally see what we're talking about.
Yeah, that's definitely a worthy cause. If maybe we could make a club, because they sometimes have student clubs that we can create. So maybe for next year, we could really build a whole club on stopping the old people from forcing us to take tests.
You'll have a lot of, you'll have a lot of allies. I'm sure most teachers would probably be thrilled by that.
Yeah. And you can also focus your efforts, regardless of what grade you're in this year, on letting 11th graders know that the test they're going to be asked to take this year is not required. And, they can refuse that test. They just sit down, log in, and log back out again. But there's no requirement. They're just providing the state with exit data before they leave high school.
Yeah, I'm also I'm telling my friends about it. I'm telling them how to opt out and that you just can't open it and close it. You have to go into the test, go through the questions, not answer any questions, and then sign out as if you answered none. But I'm also having, my friends talk about how they're more than a score, and I'm having them take pieces of paper from comp books and say, I am not a score, I am blank, and in the blank they would put beautiful or energetic or artistic or musical. That way, if we get a lot more pictures of students holding that, the state...
Oops. You're cutting in and out.
Breaking up?
You're breaking up.
What? But you're describing kind of campaign. I mean, whether it is often as the case with kids because of different limitations that we've destroyed their public spaces, they have to do it online. That's great, Or that's something
to use.
It's so
exciting.
Instagram, Facebook,
it's really exciting for us to hear about student activism and how it's starting to develop here. In other states like Colorado and Chicago, or in Illinois, not Chicago, Washington State, there are student unions, and we don't have student unions here. We have student government, and it is just not the same.
We barely have teacher unions.
Student government is making posters,
and that's it. I don't want to bash student government, but it's very different. But awareness of social issues, whether it's this or not, But it's so inspiring, and we do have a student page, Opt-Out Florida Students, that you can link to. And some of these students are developing Twitter accounts, Instagram accounts, so that they can start organizing. We have a student in a district in Florida that would like to do a walkout on test day. He has 200 students in the high school ready to go. So they're going to start meeting soon to organize. So it needs to be the students. This needs to be a student-led thing.
Yeah.
So they need to become aware of why they would want to opt out, though. It can't just be about them, because you're going to have high-performing students that could do just fine. But they need to maybe opt out for the guy that's not going to do fine and for the guy that's going to be denied the diploma and go nowhere.
That's a real education right there.
Yeah.
You're just,
yeah.
Now
you said
you're
like
learning.
20 or 30% of the grade. I'm one of the students who, at least in some classes, I could take that hit and still pass.
Right.
But some kids aren't going to risk it, because if they get a zero on that thing, it's game over.
Well, and remember, we're talking about two different tests here. The end of course exams and the FSA test are very different.
Yeah.
You can opt out of the FSA in 11th grade, and there you don't have to take an alternative assessment. You don't need anything. In 10th grade, you would need to take an SAT or ACT to replace the score.
I'm opting out.
You're
of the
still
FSA.
There.
Right. Well, I'll certainly do that. I don't want to take any tests. I don't have to.
Right, and you have to do a refusal. You have to sit for the test. Hey, you want to describe that refusal process again?
The opting out?
Yeah.
Okay,
on a computer.
Basically, you go onto the computer and you click on the test. You go straight to question one, where you can actually see the question, and then skip all the way to the end. It'll like show a screen saying that you didn't answer.
It's all zero.
Yeah, just...
Oops, we lost you again a little bit. But I think, right, you have to get in, you have to, right? I'm repeating just in case. The sound was good until we lost her. But that's the one that has a high risk, in a sense of high risk of activism, if I can use a pun here, right? There might be lower hanging fruit, which are useful in movements like this, where if you can do things that won't get you arrested and beat up.
It won't cost you academically,
because as of
this year, the 11th grade FSA has nothing attached to it at all but a sticker. And so you'll get a little sticker on your diploma that says scholar, but it doesn't impact your transcript. And I did call four in-state colleges and four out-of-state colleges and ask them if when they look at admissions, do they consider scholar diplomas from the state of Florida, and they had no idea what I was talking about.
Right.
And even the in-state colleges don't know what a scholar diploma is. So it means nothing. There is intent. They're going to use it for something eventually.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to use it in the determination for how much Bright Futures money you get, if there's any Bright Futures left.
Mm-hmm.
But eventually the scholar designated diploma will be part of the factoring in of whether or not you're going to get any Bright Futures money. But right now, this year is the year. This could be huge. We could have thousands and thousands of students across the state of Florida, 11th graders, say, I'm standing up. I don't want to be part of this anymore. I've been a part of it since I was in stinking third grade. I want to be done. And they can refuse the test.
And they'll hide it from us. They won't say, oh, you have this option if you don't want to actually complete any part of it. They'll just say, it's just a test you have to complete, but you actually don't have to in reality.
That's right. Right.
That's why we need to hear it from, like, other students, is because teachers and administrators aren't going to openly say that. I feel like if we students, like, really hit it hard through, like, social media and at school, then people would start to realize that they're not even necessary.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. You could start a refuse FSA 11th grade. I mean, please find each other and become active in this. Because
we know each other.
I don't mean the two of you. I mean this to be effective. We have to we have to hurt the system. We need at least 5% of the students to refuse to take the test. It will skew the data so that they can't use it. So if 5% of the students across the state, 5% of the 11th graders, don't take the test, they can't use the data. And that's the point. We don't want them to find that data useful.
Maybe
in any way.
Civil disobedience, we should call it civil sabotage.
Well, yep. Sabotage
whatever
is part
words,
of civil disobedience. It's traditional. Yeah. Nelson Mandela went to jail for sabotage specifically.
That's right. Yep.
So absolutely, this is all very exciting. I doubt we can, you know, in the next 5 minutes, lay it out. But I think this is, let's call it a call for action. Last week we spent 2 hours with Rivera-san, and I know Jesse's working hard trying to recover something out of that messed up audio that we had. So sorry about that, but Jesse will do something. It was a magic. And she talks about 3.5% is often kind of the number that bandied out there for a kind of nonviolent action.
Mm-hmm.
That's 3.5% is even enough to really tip the balance a little
bit. So
that's
just a few circles of friends, like.
Well,
we
maybe you need
this.
To go into the street even. I'm thinking of our friends that
nobody's
often come,
in the street,
and I'll
Daddy.
See them tomorrow evening. Speak Up Florida, stop the new Jim Crow, and the Orlando Light Brigade. I'm sure we'll be able to whip up some nice signs for us to put at night to say stop the testing or something along those lines. Part of the big deal is this movement of movements, right, where every little cause that doesn't have enough influence supports each other.
That's right.
And it
really does
numbers.
Need to be a student-led revolution to get to take public education back. You guys have way more energy than I have, so I'm old.
And if it only takes 5% of us to skew data, we have a lot of power that they don't
That's
want us knowing about.
That's right.
Especially the high-scoring students, because if the high scorers like deny the data from the state,
then we can drop scores down and they can't use it even more. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yep. Thank you.
We
Thank
have a
you.
Plan.
Thank
Thanks,
you.
Kyle.
Thank you, Kayla.
We have to.
Thank you.
All right, so we're getting to the end of our program here
on
Punkonomics.
No,
we got another phone call.
Wow, you know, well, let's see if we can fit them in just for the last minute here. But yeah, I mean, it's a cause that it's both pragmatic. It's our kids. Okay. It's social justice. It's the future of America. I mean, who wouldn't get behind this?
Teaching civil consciousness is important.
We have another caller wants to ask a question about opting out.
All right.
Caller.
Wow. Sweet.
Hello.
Yes, you're on the air.
Hi. I just, I've only been listening for about the last 20 minutes, but I'm very interested in this, and I have a son who's in 11th grade, and I just don't, I want to be able to get some information on exactly what's at risk and what we could do to opt out successfully.
For 11th grade, there's no risk. The 11th grade FSA, and we're talking about the FSA, not end of course exams, so keep that in mind. But the FSA is being delivered to 11th graders this year, and the only benefit is a sticker on the diploma. There are no punitive damages attached to refusing the test, but he needs to go through a test refusal, which means he sits, he signs in, and he doesn't answer any questions. Answering the questions across the board for all grades is not mandated by the state of Florida, only participation.
Okay, there we go.
Yeah, we're running out of time, so I want to say, first of all, thanks,
thank you, all callers,
absolutely. We had with us today, apart from some of the usual suspects, special guest is Cindy Hamilton. I mean, she's co-founder of the Opt Out Orlando, which has a WordPress site, and these days just Google Opt Out Orlando, and you'll find them on Facebook and the website with some information, a YouTube channel too. And when we cut a PDF, when we cut a podcast out of this, we'll also put some extra information on there to remind you, and we'll try and keep tabs also on punkonomics.org.
We'll put like instructions and stuff, or if we find it, links to instructions for like how to screw up their data and break this
well,
infernal
there
machine.
Well, there is a student Facebook page.
Oh,
so it's Opt Out Florida Students. And it's students only. We don't let grown-ups on there. We have a teacher on there that's helping us and two administrators from Opt Out Orlando. But you guys need to use that and do some research and organize. And
fight the power.
You're going to have to go on Facebook, Felix. He's such a
I know.
He's digital snob. He refuses to go on
Facebook.
All right, folks. So
hey, thank you.
Okay, wait, time out. Yep. But, important. Kids are going to raise hell and fix the world.
All right, so you've been listening to Punkonomics here with Dr. Balick. My name is Jesse Velez, co-host. Cindy, Felix. Are you sleeping back there, Jay?
I'm not sleeping.
Anyway, tune into Punkonomics again next Wednesday from 2 to 4 here under WPRK. We're in a park, Florida.
It's like a jungle sometimes. It makes me wonder how I keep from going under.
The preceding program did not reflect the views or opinions of the station, its management, or employees.